I'm intrigued by a major body of water that we usually overlook, even though it frames so much of the Celtic world. When I look at a map of the British Isles, it's easy to notice how the basin that we call the Irish Sea works to keep Ireland separate from Scotland, England, and Wales. And then there's the Isle of Man in the middle of it, home to yet another intriguing Celtic culture. I've called in two of my favorite tour guides from either side of the Irish Sea to tell us how that body of water influences their worlds and to help us to make it part of our travel plans between Ireland and Britain. Stephen McPhillamy joins us from Derry in Northern Ireland. And if you've heard him before on Travel with Rick Steves, you know he's loyal to Ireland through and through. Martin Delandovitz is a proud son of Wales, and he lives not far from the sea in the north of Wales. Stephen and Martin, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rick. Great to be here.
So it's the Irish Sea. Does anybody dispute that? Why isn't it the Welsh Sea?
There's no disputes. We're happy it's called the Irish Sea, but I wonder what the Welsh perspective is.
No, I mean, you can take it if you want. It sort of comes and goes anyway, doesn't it, on a daily basis?
Well, there's another one called the Celtic Sea.
But that's what it is. You got Scotland, the Isle of Man, Ireland and Wales all around there. It's a basin surrounded by Celtic people.
Yeah.
It is. And the reason that it is surrounded by Celtic people is, of course, because the sea is there, because we tend to view the sea as an obstacle these days to travel, but it was the highway.
Well, that's true, isn't it? In the old days, that was the way to
connect.
That was
the highway. I mean, you stand on the Giant's Causeway, you're looking at Scotland. And I go to the top of Holyhead Mountain, I'm looking at Ireland.
What is the approach to the sea between Ireland and Wales? Because when I'm in Wales, we've got all of these lifeboat initiatives going on. Mm-hmm. Apparently, there's a need to rescue people at sea. I don't recall lifeboat charities in Ireland.
We actually have them too. We have the same charity that these guys have, the Royal National Lifeboat Institute.
Is that right?
But funny enough, like we're not a very... For an island, I think it's funny that Ireland's not a very,
seafaring
nation.
No.
Like we have no admiral heroes or... We had one pirate queen back in the 1500s, but apart from that, none.
Martin was talking about how in the Middle Ages, and that was a connection. So Ireland and Wales would have been connected via the Irish Sea.
Yeah, if you look back, it's the intriguing thing. You go back to the 600s, 700s, 800s, and the O'Neill of Ulster were rulers of Scotland. They were rulers both on the Isles and they were rulers in Ulster. You think about Vikings. I mean, if you look at the Irish Sea, if you look at the Viking Kingdom of Dublin, and then they also own the Outer Isles, settlement in Wales. At different times, different sets of people moved across the Irish Sea and controlled it. It was a unifying thing culturally, linguistically, rather than anything that divided.
On the point of connecting Wales and Ireland, Irish chieftains used to raid the coast of Wales, and that's how we got St. Patrick to come to Ireland.
Yes, that's true.
He didn't come by choice. We went and stole him, brought him back as a
slave.
He was a Roman Briton. He either lived in the north of England or somewhere in northern
Carlisle,
Wales.
Carlisle, they reckon these days, don't they?
Yeah. And when you think about the Irish Sea, it actually, we're talking about it being a connector, but it was also kind of a barrier because the Romans got to Wales, but they just decided not to cross over to Ireland.
Yeah, and that's an important part of our history too, is the sea has been, Irish Sea has been a protector of Ireland. It's kept the enemy out. I mean, invaders like the English or the Romans, whoever, obviously they're English crossed it, but we have an old song in Ireland and the chorus of it is, the sea, it's about the Irish Sea. The chorus goes, the sea, long may it roll between England and me. It's our sure guarantee that one day we'll be free. Thank God we're surrounded by water.
Again,
that's beautiful. And the Welsh don't have that sea to protect them.
If you look, yeah.
So you're more integrated into England.
In a way, yes. I mean, the truth about Wales is from the, let's say, the Roman point of view. Romans never wanted Wales. It rains too much. The soil is thin and acid. All you can ever grow in Wales is small sheep and discontented people. It's not a land that gives bounty. Then let's talk about Ireland. Do the Romans
even
want it?
More godforsaken than Wales?
Now, I'll tell you something that's interesting to me, and I'm just thinking about this talking now. West Coast people. Now, West Coast America, here we are in Seattle, far more laid back. And throughout, if you go to France, down the West Coast and all that, they're really laid back people. East Coast people are uptight by comparison. Now, the part of Ireland that looks at us is the East Coast.
In Ireland, do you have that East-West business?
Oh, yeah. I buy into that. Yeah, that philosophy. I think the West Coast of Ireland's very similar to the West Coast of Britain, like the Welsh.
Exactly. But, we're looking across the same bit of sea, aren't we? It's only a tiny little bit of sea.
Now, when you think about the difference between the Irish and the Welsh, can you make a case that there was less difference before the Romans stopped and the difference today between Ireland and Wales can be traced back to the fact that the Romans took Wales, but they never impacted Irish culture? Or what causes the difference between the Welsh and the Irish?
Linguistically, they're different. That happens in the 400s, the 500s, the linguistic change. I mean, they are Celtic languages. But, do you know, all of Celtic society, both out of Ireland and both out of Wales. It was an extremely fragmented society. Within Ireland, and Stephen will tell you, within Wales, there's constant intra and internecine strife.
Okay, so there's differences within Wales as much as between Welsh and Irish.
Absolutely. And so that what you have is, when you put the Irish Sea and the two countries into it, they were just players in a great big shifting kaleidoscope of alliances, happinesses, aggressions, you know.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. I'm joined by Martin Delandowitz from Wales and Stephen McPhillamy from Ireland, two guides who know the Irish Sea well. And we're talking about the body of water that separates so many Celtic peoples. Our phone number is 877-333-7425. And Ed's on the phone in Huntington Beach, California. Ed, thanks for your call.
Well, thank you for taking my call. My wife and I are going to be traveling in Ireland and Scotland in August, and one of the legs will be going from Belfast over to Stranraer. I was just curious about the kinds of things we might be seeing on that trip over and how the weather might be.
Well, I've taken that trip myself hundreds of times. I think it's one of the great things about the Irish Sea is that it's a very busy sea. Like, we're always crossing it all the time. Tourists who come to Ireland and Scotland, for some unknown reason, think they have to fly between the two countries, when it's a beautiful experience to get on the boat. The ferry that you'll be taking is not just a little car ferry. Like, this is like a cruise ship.
Now, this is the main ferry basically connecting Belfast and Glasgow, right?
Yeah, you'll take your car, you drive on the boat downtown Belfast, park your car, head up to the bar or head up to the restaurant. They even have a McDonald's. They call it the fastest fast food in the world.
Oh, now, wait, I don't think I would do that. Ireland. Come on.
This is what you're going to see on your trip. And as you're going over, keep your eyes on the sea, because you can get a minke whale there.
Absolutely, yeah.
You can get dolphins, porpoise, basking shark, which is, I think it's the largest shark.
Yeah,
in
huge, big, 20-foot long.
Massive things.
It might be a bit choppy going over. You know, sometimes it gets a wee bit choppy, but the boat's so big you don't really feel it. It's like a big cruise ship. Only if it gets like tsunami standards will they cancel the ferry, and that's very rare. Yeah. You'd never get that in the summer.
Now, Ed's going to be heading over to Scotland, but just south of that is Sellafield, right? This notorious nuclear power plant. I read that the Irish Sea is one of the most radioactive seas in the world.
Yeah, well, we're very nervous about it in Ireland because we're nuclear free, and we're worried that the British nuclear station might melt down someday, and all it takes then is for the wind to change direction and we start glowing in the dark.
You can laugh on this side of the Atlantic, but
it's such a problem, isn't it? And I'm no lover of nuclear power either. But do you know, if you think about coal, oil, gas, global warming, the thing about it is that nuclear, well, doesn't warm the environment. But if it goes wrong, it goes spectacularly wrong,
yeah,
doesn't it?
It's a tough issue. But apart from the safety of nuclear power and those kind of concerns, is the Irish Sea, is there a concern that it still provides healthy seafood to eat and so on, or is it too polluted?
Yeah, there's a lot of points about, or a lot of comments that it is very radioactive and that it is polluted, but I know there's a lot of fishing going on in the Irish Sea and we're still eating our fish from it. I've eaten all my life.
It's not affected us, has it?
No.
There's another sort of exciting challenge, this vision of building a bridge or a tunnel connecting Ireland and Wales. Is that just a pipe dream, or might that happen?
Now listen, you want to think big. You're a Victorian. Do you know what they're going to do? They're going to wall off the North Passage and St. George's Channel and drain the Irish Sea.
That was a vision?
In Victorian times. Mind you, they were going to dig the Channel Tunnel back then too, and they started. And there was a serious scheme to wall off the Irish Sea, turn it maybe into a freshwater lake, then start reclaiming land. Absolutely. Think big or what?
That's huge. But I think there's the engineers in Ireland are actually, they've proposed a tunnel from Rosslare to Fishguard.
Yeah, I think it's, I've heard some chit-chat about it, but it's
not. It's not in
serious. We can't even afford a packet of peanuts in Ireland at the moment, so we're definitely. Yeah.
But the other thing, if you think about it, there's not that much traffic to justify that.
No, there wouldn't be.
Well, have wind turbines come to that part of the Irish Sea?
Yeah, you get the wind turbines, and I agree, and it's a good point to make that there are natural sources of energy that are perfectly good. But, do you know, it requires a huge thing to actually change all of our energy demands to natural sources, doesn't it? And until then, nuclear, I'm afraid, because I'm no great lover of it, is going to have to play a part, isn't it?
And see, the great thing about that ferry across from Belfast to Stranraer is once you get off on the other side, you're in Glasgow in less than an hour. Mm. You can be up in Edinburgh in 3 hours. You can drive on up to the Highlands. It just opens up everything.
You know, that's one thing a lot of people don't realize. A lot of people go to Scotland and they don't realize Belfast is just a quick ferry ride away, really.
Oh,
and there's buses leaving several times a day from Glasgow to Belfast. And then from Belfast, how long does it take on the train to get to Dublin?
Two hours. Yeah. And so it opens up everything.
Everything's open. Yeah. You go to all those Celtic capitals. And then if you even go back to Victorian times, it was a big deal when Dublin was the second city of the of Great Britain, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So what did they had a big, the London, talk about the London-Dublin connection.
You think of Glasgow mm-hmm. and you think of Edinburgh. Mm-hmm. That's a twin for, you know, for Glasgow, you read Belfast. You know, shipbuilding industry. And for Edinburgh, you Dublin, these great Georgian cities. But then in the 19th century, you're absolutely right, Rick. What happens is there's the ferry, goes across from Dublin to Holyhead.
Well, that's the north of Wales, which really is the quick connection to London.
That's right.
London to Dublin was a very important access.
Absolutely, since if you like, it was the vice-regal centre for London was HQ, if you like, headquarters, and Dublin was the vice-regal centre. And so communication between the two was essential. So you had Thomas Telford building his lovely A5, a road still used today. And then, of course, the railway arrives in the 1850s, 60s, the railways arriving.
So you go across North Wales and you see a lot of that engineering from the 19th century that
Absolutely.
Really was part of Britain asserting its control on Ireland by having a good infrastructure.
Yeah. It's, you know, the wealth of, if you look at the building of Dublin, marvelous buildings. They are beautiful. And where did that wealth come from? It's all, what built the wealth of Edinburgh? It's the British Empire.
Yeah. Well, the other thing too about this whole British Empire is that we were providing a lot of the manpower in the factories and in the linen mills and in the coal mines. And so that path from Dublin through Holyhead to London is well worn by millions of Irish people. Yeah. There's a song we have regarding how many Irish people went to London to work in World War II. The chorus of it is... it was in the year of 39, the sky was full of lead. Hitler was heading for Poland and Paddy for Holyhead.
So 1939, the war's cooking. Yeah. Hitler's heading for Poland.
Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, or the Irish Free State, is neutral. And we're providing manpower for the British Army, but we're providing 20 times more to work while the British men are off fighting the Germans.
So just like we had Rosie the Riveter here in England, you had Irish people coming in and doing the industrial labour.
Yeah, and we had this type of builder. He was called a navvy. He was like the Navy seal of construction workers.
Yeah. You know? It comes from building the navigational canals.
That's where the Navy comes from.
Yeah, yeah. That's McAlpine's Fusiliers.
McAlpine's Fusiliers.
Oh, yeah. As thou... No, sorry, mustn't start. Beautiful song.
Yeah.
And
you know the song too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
As down the glen
came McAlpine's men with their shovels slung behind them. It was in the pub that they drank their sub and a hop in the spike, as you will find them.
Oh, they sweated blood and they washed down mud with pints and with quarts of beer. But now I'm on the road again
with McAlpine's Fusiliers. McAlpine was the main construction giant in Britain, and his Irish labourers were known as McAlpine's Fusiliers.
Yeah.
And that's a folk song from the 1930s, basically.
Yeah.
And Irish and Welsh all can sing it at the drop of a hat.
Yeah.
It's a great song. The gangs, you know, the road gangs and the building gangs. And the Irish, and I have to say this, they built. Why did they build? It's because they had a reputation for working, and they did build, and they did work tremendously. But the Welsh equally provided the soldiers, as did the Irish, that maintained the British Empire, that built our cities, that built our roads, that built everything. And everything that you see in Dublin or Belfast or Glasgow or Edinburgh or indeed in London, and everything you see in Wales, that's all built with the wealth of the British Empire.
Of the British Empire and the hard labour of the Celtic people.
Yeah, but you know, hard labour of the Celtic people, and people will say, oh, we were exploited, we worked in the factories and all the rest of it. The real exploitation was going on in Africa and India. It wasn't going on.
Okay.
You know, it's terrible. You know, bad wages, bad conditions in Britain, but you go out there and you see what there is.
Going back to this whole topic of the Irish Sea, we were the Celtic nation. The Irish were the Celtic nation who was most reluctant to be part of this empire. Like Martin's talk there in glowing terms of empire isn't shared by my good self. Do you know? Like,
Wales is part of Great Britain, right?
It was easier to understand why the Welsh assimilated with the British more, with the English more, because you share the same island with them. Like, we're on our own, so it's easy for us to say we're independent and different, whereas if you're sharing the island with another tribe, which is the English, it's hard to have your own identity as much.
Going back to the 19th century now, in the 18th century, and Ireland was then yet part of Great Britain then, wasn't it? Since 1801, was it? The thing about it is that I don't speak in glowing terms of the British Empire, but if you want to see its products, then you go to our great cities. And you may be ashamed of it, you may regret it, but at the end of the day, you can't deny where the money came from. That's where it really came from.
It's kind of like being beat by Rome in the ancient times.
Absolutely.
Well, you lost the battle, but now you're on the winning team.
Yeah. Mind you, that team is now long gone. The British Empire is a memory, but Britain is now Great Britain. I fail to see its greatness much.
But
myself.
I love what you guys were talking about with the great cities. I mean, Glasgow, Belfast, industrial powerhouses.
Yeah.
And then their sister cities,
the culture
Edinburgh
cities.
And Dublin,
yes,
the cultural cities.
Yes. Yes.
And
yeah.
Today, for a long time, everybody's been crazy about Dublin and Edinburgh, but people are paying more attention to Glasgow and Belfast these days.
You go to Scotland now and all the young people want to live in Glasgow.
Yeah.
There's a harder image to those two towns too, isn't there?
Oh, yeah.
Belfast
bit
and
of
Glasgow.
Danger. Bit of danger.
Working
well,
class.
Yeah.
Not
for,
genteel.
No,
you got the gentility in Dublin or Edinburgh.
Shipyards and dock workers.
And good, healthy immigrant populations too.
Speaking of immigrant population and the Irish Sea, a big crossing was Irish people going across the Irish Sea to Liverpool on their way to the United States.
Yeah, that's right. So Liverpool is a huge Irish community there. Lots of the Beatles had an Irish background, and there's a big Catholic cathedral there, which would be a huge one. It's known as Paddy's Wigwam.
Paddy's Wigwam. This is Travel with Rick Steves. I'm speaking with Martin Dalandovitz from Wales and Stephen McPhillamy from Ireland, and we're talking about the Irish Sea. You guys are proud Celtic nations, and there's a quirky little Celtic group right in the middle of the Irish Sea, the Isle of Man.
Yeah, that's where our brothers, the Manx people, live, M-A-N-X. That's the name of the tribe that inhabit the Isle
Manx.
Of Man.
And how are they different from the Irish and the Welsh?
Well, they're pretty different. Like, they used to have their own language. Unfortunately, now I'm pretty sure Manx is dead. It's extinct. But they have the oldest parliament in the world. They're very proud people. They have a nice sort of Celtic Viking mix. They have casinos there. It's the only part of the UK that...
So politically, they're part of England?
Yeah, they're part of the United Kingdom, but they're a little self-governing kind of... I don't know if I'd use the word protectorate, but they're a little... Right. They have their own little parliament. And quote me if I'm wrong here, Martin, but the Isle of Man is tax-free.
It has a different tax regime, very different.
Yeah, tax haven.
And it's to live there nowadays, you can't just turn up and say, I want to live here. You've got to have a healthy bank balance before they'll let you in.
I have a few friends on the Isle of Man. I was surprised how different they are. Like, they have a very distinct culture. Real sort of proud and... And they also are famous for having cats with no tails.
Cats with no tails. Yeah, people go to Isle of Man, they always are struck by how interesting the experience is.
One of the most interesting things for me about the Isle of Man is that, like the United States, we imprisoned people during World War II who were ethnically of our enemies. And many of the German origin people were in fact Jewish, who had escaped Nazi Germany. But because of their German origins, they were imprisoned. And of course, the people that came were all the professors, the lawyers, and the Isle of Man had a huge camp for people of German origin, but they were as British as I am. And it was a university. It was the best university in Britain during World War II. Every book on the archaeology of the Isle of Man, Gerhard Bessieux, was written during World War II. Phenomenal work was done there.
So I don't quite understand. English would lock up Germans just like Americans locked up Japanese.
Yes, exactly.
And these were people that fled Germany before.
That's right.
And they went to England, but England locked them up and put them on their own little island.
Yes. So, I mean, some went to Australia, some went here, some went there.
So England used the Isle of Man
absolutely
as an Alcatraz for suspected German
during
sympathizers.
World War II. But they say it was the most cultured place in the world during World War II.
Flappers say what's coming to us, there's no villains to pursue us, and they call it the Isle of Man.
Tell us about your own experiences on the Isle of Man or exploring any other areas around the Irish Sea at 877-333-7425. Or you can post your travel tales and thoughts in the radio section of ricksteves.com. There's more with Martin Dalandovitz from Wales and Stephen McPhillamy from Ireland in just a moment on Travel with Rick Steves.